Welcome to Marketing with Confidence. I'm your host, Marianne Ames. We're going to be talking all things digital and online marketing for business owners and marketing professionals. If you've been feeling overwhelmed by your digital marketing, be sure to listen along and you'll hear tips, interviews, and more that will give you the confidence to create marketing you love. Welcome back to another episode of Marketing with Confidence. I'm so excited to be joined today by Danica Bunch, and we're going to be talking about crisis PR. How are you going, Danica?
I'm well, and thank you for having me. I'm very excited about this.
Oh, me too. Look, I'd love you to kick off by telling everyone about yourself and how you became such a passionate PR professional.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, Danica Bunch, I have the agency Danica B PR Collective, which was born around 2020. So in the midst of COVID, which we just had a very, very light chat about. And I stepped out of over 20 years working in all levels of government and different not-for-profit sectors, always working in PR and working on reputation management and very much crisis work. Yeah. But I saw an opportunity and started to step out, and it was very interesting because it was very timely.
Yeah.
It was something the world really needed: government relations, public relations, crisis PR, and very much reputation and positioning. So this is how it all began, and it's something that the world has just gobbled up and enjoyed. And I'm really excited to talk to you because I think there's a beautiful relationship between PR and marketing.
Absolutely.
And the two work so well together. Yeah.
Agree. I think, there's so much entwined in each. And I think as time has gone along as well, I think a lot more, you know, PR businesses are offering some of the marketing services because it's such a natural fit. And it's, you know, it's sort of the extension of that. And it's the same, obviously, when we work with clients, we're often, like I did a 2-hour strategy with a client yesterday, and I was like, I think a whole lot of this is actually PR. You know, I think a whole lot of raising your profile will actually make sense in media. And I think it's, it is. It's, they're both kind of not tactics, but they're both strategies within each other's realms as well. So yeah, no, I think I'm really excited.
And I think there's more opportunity for the two to come together. And that's why I think this is such a great opportunity for us to project and to tell that story of how that can happen and how both can bring some magic to an overall holistic strategy for a business or person.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in the past, one of the barriers has been that, you know, the cost to work with PR for small businesses. And, you know, I think over the last, even pre-COVID, post-COVID, there's a lot more options now. There's a lot more people that have now gone, hang on, I want to create an accessible opportunity for small business to tap into this because they need it. And I think as that, again, that model has shifted, and, you know, I think that's part of also the digital push, you know, or the magazines and you know, they're not the be all and end all that they used to be. And so that model of PR has adapted. And I think, I think that accessibility to small business is a really exciting phase as well.
Oh, totally. And I was one of the early disruptors in that process because when I did step into agencies, I could see the disillusionment with the agency model. I could see that there were certain agencies that were just justifying hours and retainers at very arm's length to the client. Yeah. And as you said, they were priced ridiculously high for something that then becomes inaccessible to the everyday business or the everyday person. And so that's very much what we look to disrupt and change
Beautiful.
Our agencies. So we could represent everyone from, you know, the local tradesman or butcher shop, which is a very small, you know, one-man operation or one-woman operation, right through to we represent big corporates.
Yeah, beautiful.
Big levels of change. And that's something that I've been very mindful is making sure that that is accessible for all. I've even to the point where I've done, you know, talks with New South Wales government for the small month and things like that, because I think this is something that we can teach people quite easily. much of it is about a mindset shift as well, and getting people in the right mindset for it. So some of that can be done quite simply. And that's something that I'm very passionate about.
Oh, beautiful. Well, look, let's get to know you a little bit better. So I've got some quick questions that I think are quite hard. coffee or wine?
Oh, this is a hard one because I'm from a beautiful wine growing region. Oh, so absolutely. I think there's a time and a place for both. But I have to say, anything to do with friends, you know, socializing and friends. So I love the ritual of both. Yeah. But probably my favorite would be wine.
I think it is the AM to PM.
There is a bit of AM to PM. And I think for me, it's very much the ritual that goes around both of those things. It's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Reading for pleasure or for development?
Look, I do both, but my favourite is reading for pleasure. It's certainly an escape for me. I've written my own book. I'm an author. Writing is a passion that I'm compelled to do every day. I do about 50 minutes of free writing every morning.
Oh, just wow, that's lovely.
That creativity happening, but also to get things out of my head to process. Yeah. But, yeah, it's definitely reading for pleasure.
And do you have a book recommendation?
Yeah, actually, I just read, it was 101 Essays That Will Change the Way You Think by Brianna Wiest. I love having my mind changed.
Yes.
I love having my own thoughts disrupted. And this is one of those books, I read it from cover to cover, but now I'm finding that I'm dipping back into it from time to time when I just need that triggering thought or that triggering question.
I actually have it right behind me.
Oh, there you go.
It's one of the few books that I was compelled to, like, post-it note, like, things in it where I was like, oh, I want to read that again at some point. I want to find that piece again. So, no, agree. I think I actually haven't finished it and I've had it for a little while, but I kind of go back and forth to it. But, yeah, it was one of the books I was like, I need highlighters and I need sticky notes because there's so much in it. Yeah.
And I find for every phase, it might be a week that you're going through, a day you're going through, a phase of life you're going through, there's something in there. There's something awful that you'll pick up. You know, just in recent times, I'm very much wanting to challenge myself and face some fears. And I love the way she described how fear is actually a curiosity as well. It's not just about escaping, but it's also a curiosity into why you're afraid. And I think it's just thoughts like that which are very provoking.
Yeah, agree. This is an interesting one for you. Beach or bush?
Oh, I love both, but actually what I really love is desert. I'm a desert person.
Wow.
But it's very, very out there. But if you were to ask me where I would go for mindfulness and to take a breath, I love that. I lived in the Northern Territory on and off for a year and it's just touched me so much.
Yeah.
And it's something about those big skies at night, those landscapes. I think are just so extreme.
Oh, wow. I haven't spent proper time. I'm not a camper.
I don't camp either. I think I've evolved beyond camping.
I can imagine the beauty of being in that area, but it's something I should go and explore actually. Australian of me
to feel your feet in the red dirt and feel so connected and to be looking up at that sky, particularly at night. It just makes you, puts a lot of things in perspective about humanity, about your thoughts, about where you're at any place and time.
Yeah, amazing. And then lastly, Instagram or LinkedIn?
Look, LinkedIn is my bread and butter. I have to say I live on it compulsively through the day, staying connected with people. But I do love Instagram. I'm not one for sort of following, you know, influencers like that, because again, that's very much linked to my day. But I, you know, there are certain people that I just love following. You know, I love the guys on Sailing the Vagabond who, you know, I watch them every night before I sleep just to escape. I think those sorts of Instagrams are just really lovely to have on your scroll.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of like LinkedIn is almost work and Instagram
is the
pleasure to unwind with.
Exactly.
Fantastic. Well, look, let's dive in. As we touched on before, you know, I think what's really great to focus on today is that small business lens. What do you see as the opportunity for small businesses to leverage PR?
Oh, look, I think it's an enormous opportunity. And I think we touched on it before. It's about, a lot of the time it can be about cost. Mm. So when you are putting any budget towards marketing and PR, you want to make sure that you're hitting the mark and you've got a return on investment. Yeah. And I've seen a lot of small businesses really take a scattergun approach, and it can be costly. It can be costly in money, but it can also be costly in time, particularly if you're doing it yourself.
Yeah.
I love about PR is we take that step back and we really take a moment to think about who are we targeting? What are we selling? What's our messaging? Everything is about simplifying and making it effective. And I think marketing for me is very much the delivery of it. And I think it's really important to have a strategy around the tactics of delivery.
Mm.
PR is very much about taking that step back and saying, well, how will I appear? What will the public perception be? Yeah. How do I make sure that I connect very succinctly with my audience? And you know, obviously, and how will I actually connect with that audience? Yeah. Who are they? Yeah. I think too often we just connect with our current audience, yeah, and that's not what we want. That's not growing our business or growing our profile. We want to touch the untouchables, so to speak.
Yeah.
That's where I think PR is very important. And through what I've said, you'll see very much that it is a lot of it is about mindset. So it is something that can be easily taught to business owners.
Yeah.
And when you think about all the big brands that we know of every day, their branding, their marketing, and then their PR delivery is just so simplistic.
Mm.
It's repetition. It's about then recognition. And to do that, it has to be simple. It has to be
simple.
Simple is not always easy. And no. So it's good to have someone guide you through that process.
Absolutely.
But yeah, there's definitely so much opportunity for small business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always think it's sometimes, you know, I guess PR can be not unpredictable, but there's a lot of pushing to then, you know, get that return. But when you get that return, the scale often that it can give you, especially for a small business owner, you couldn't actually pay to play in that space. No. You know, if you get that article on that online blog that goes across all the socials, or if they, you know, you get that little clip on morning TV, as small business owners, we can't afford the media buy of that. Exactly. And, you know, the scale is so huge of what you can achieve.
Exactly. And I think also as our world changes and as we're becoming more proficient with social media and more curious, we're also very aware of, you know, the inauthentic and that pay to play that used to happen in PR. I think people see through that straight away. You know, I'll flick through publications like the AFR or the Heralds and all of that sort of thing. And in 5 seconds, I can tell if a business owner is paid for that.
The editorial.
Exactly. And I think that's where there's so much more opportunity, particularly with our own media.
Yeah.
So, for example, on LinkedIn, there's an incredible opportunity to have control of your narrative and your storytelling in a much more authentic way and present in a much more authentic way. I actually think some of those paid versions are actually moving out because people can see through them quite quickly and they don't tend to connect with it once they have a question over authenticity. So I think, again, having a PR person that is aware of that and also can give you the feedback and give really honest feedback about why they don't think something's going to work, or to call it out early, because you don't want to be down, you don't want to have your reputation damaged.
Yeah.
And I think we tend to see people on social media where we kind of roll our eyes and go, oh, that's almost a bit cringy. We don't want that to happen. Yeah. So we really need to have a strategy that's authentic.
Yeah, I love that. I think that rings really true. On the topic of crisis PR, I guess, what are some of the crises that you've seen hit small business or business owners, and maybe some examples of how they navigated that?
Yeah, look, a crisis is going to happen to everybody in business. That's something that people don't want to hear. Yeah. But let me tell you, the first thing that I guess helps a lot of businesses when they hit that crisis is being prepared.
Yeah.
So doing a crisis preparedness strategy, doing some work in how to manage a crisis is very important.
Yeah.
And it's probably the strongest step that you can take, because the first 24 hours of crisis will basically define the outcome.
Yeah.
So that's early intervention. And that's probably where I see most businesses go wrong with a crisis. Yeah. By the time it gets to me, it might have been a few weeks later, and it is harder. It is harder to regain control, to manage it. And we see crises. It could be anything from, you know, a food poisoning event. Mm. We saw COVID outbreaks happen to small businesses.
Yeah, which is heartbreaking, because it's not necessarily that business's fault, but you know, they were the place. Yeah.
Exactly. And perception is reality. Mm. That's the problem, is that a lot of the time it might be something that happens in social media. It might be something that happens in the media. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it's true or it's a true reflection, but we still need to manage that perception of what has occurred.
Yeah.
And I manage crises, everything from personal crises, women going managing personal crises. I've done a lot of talk about the frameworks that women can use personally and professionally, but right through to managing very big crises. So big turnarounds for corporations. One thing that is very, very strong to me is I have very strong ESG values within my my company and my agencies. So we are very selective at the crises we manage.
Yeah, sure. Yes.
Don't ambulance chase crisis. We need to make sure that there was a reputation to begin with that we can rebuild, and we'll also investigate all aspects of that crisis before we actually take it on. We can certainly advise, but again, we need to make sure that our impact is strong and it is a positive impact.
And I guess it's also your reputation, you know, if you assist in the wrong crisis and there's a integrity question or, you know, something, obviously there's that opportunity, which is kind of the wrong word, but risk that you will, you know, you'll be taken down with it. So I imagine. Oh,
absolutely. And the PR crisis world is very small. It's very small. And there are people that have a reputation for taking on crises that, you know, are a little bit more in that space.
Yeah.
And it's certainly not one that I want to take on. You know, as the old adage is about John West, it's the fish that they reject that makes the And I guess, I guess it's the same for crisis PR. It is defining of you as a PR practitioner, but also defining of your agency.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, social media, for better and for worse, has also had a huge impact in terms of how those crises can spread and how, you know, people will jump on, you know, and it's almost like it's like that human compulsion to get involved in things that happen, as the car crash, to stop and look, you know, and people, I think that's where, again, coming back to having a really clear plan in place, and obviously we'll touch more on that, but I think, you know, I think before Christmas there was a fashion label that kind of had a crisis over deliveries, and then before you knew it, you know, every man and his dog had something to say on it. And, you know, you kind of read through the comments and you're like, did that person even place an order? And yet here they are lumping on and lumping on, and you can see it just spiral. And again, before social media, we didn't have this.
No, it's almost trial by public opinion.
Really. Yes.
And that's why it's very important to communicate during a crisis. I think there are businesses, and we've probably seen crises, you know, probably some very big crises too. We saw some big tech companies go through crisis late last year, where their statements actually came under fire. So what they said was so terrible, and you can't even believe that those statements came out, because they would have had to go through so many levels of advice.
Yes.
a lot of us were standing back in the industry going, what is going on here? This is crazy.
Yeah.
So it is important to communicate during a crisis and to communicate early, but you've really got to think about your messaging.
Yeah.
You've got to think about the people that you are talking to and you're connecting with.
Yeah.
And you have to make sure you're giving them the information that they want to hear.
Yeah.
Don't tell them what they want to hear. Give them the information that they need to hear.
Mm.
Because it's very important to be as accurate as you can and to be as transparent. I don't want to say honest. I want to say transparent because sometimes we will have to share information that we're not proud of or we're not happy has occurred.
Yeah.
But when you're satisfying that curiosity and you're answering things in that transparent way, you will find that it will actually a lot of that public opinion will drop off. A lot of those trolls will drop off because you're actually, there's nothing that they can then attach to.
Yes.
They can't pull you out on anything. And as long as you're also talking about how you're addressing it and you are actually doing that, very much action and outcome focused.
Yeah. And look, you've given some already, certainly, but I'd love to kind of get your top tips. You know, how do people prepare for the worst case and put that plan in place for it?
Yeah, look, I think any business that I guess the first thing is to identify the risks within your business. And that's when you then need to engage someone. And it is not a costly process to do a crisis preparedness plan. We do it for very small businesses. We do it for large corporations. And the first thing is to look at the risks that can occur.
Yeah.
And then you plan out from there what's going to happen, like what could potentially happen.
Yeah.
And I think having internal communication so that everyone is aware of what's happening, having actionable steps once the crisis has occurred, early intervention is crucial. I emphasize that enough, but also a step that is often not followed is reflection after a crisis. So you may have a small crisis and you think, oh, well, that's done. Let's move on. It's really important because we learn from crisis. We learn for the next one. We learn about where are the holes within our organization? Where are the holes in our communications?
Yeah.
And then you're just stronger and more resilient as a business for the next one that comes along.
That's such a good point. I think the relief of it passing is almost, you're right. It's kind of like, well, we survived that. Let's, you know, let's go on. But to go,
exactly.
What did we do? It's almost like doing the SWOT analysis on how it went, you know, what did we do well? What did we do poorly? How can we be better prepared for next time?
And I think we also, something that I'm very conscious on in managing crises is I also look after the people involved in the crisis.
Yeah.
We need to be very aware of the impact it's having on senior people or key people emotionally, mentally. We need to take care of them during that process. So quite often I will check in on things like, are you getting enough sleep?
Yeah.
Are you in a good headspace for this today? To somebody else. What's your self-care at the moment? Yeah. Are you taking a break? Are you going for a walk? And it may seem like I'm overstepping a mark, but it's really important to take care of people through that because we also see that people can hit burnout.
Absolutely.
So I'm very conscious of mentoring, coaching, and I guess nurturing people along the way as well.
I think that's such a strong insight as well because behind every business is a person, you know, and whether that's a small business, it's obviously amplified because they're obviously one person on their own trying to navigate. But even within a larger business, if you're an employee and it falls under your responsibility, then you have all this kind of concern of, you know, what does it mean for your future? So I think that's, it's a really interesting insight to remember to take care of the person that is navigating it as well.
Absolutely. Even in your biggest corporate crisis, you'll see me taking the CEO aside from time to time, having a cup of tea, checking in, you know, the nightly phone call to say, how was your day? How are you going? Are you going to get enough sleep tonight? You know, checking, it's all of those questions. Yeah. And
I like that every day.
If only we had someone checking in
just to every check day. At the end of each day.
Actually, there's probably a bit of a message in that, to be honest.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. And that would be so nice, wouldn't it? Just someone actually asking at the end of every day, are you okay?
Exactly. But yeah, I just think it's so important. Mm. And it also builds a great relationship between me and the key people who are involved in the crisis, you know, that trust, because they really look to me as that, I guess, that safe pair of hands coming in to take care of things, but I need to take care of them as well. Yeah.
And again, I think that going back to what we said at the very start, I think that's a shift again. You know, I think of my days in corporate. I was in corporate for about 15 years, worked on really big brands. Our PR people are often unapproachable. You know, I know, there was that very elevated, we are the PR company, we do all this stuff for you, the marketing team. I don't think they had that approachability. And I think, again, you know, the almost overturning of agency culture has changed. And I guess as people we're evolving, we all do a lot more self-development than, you know, 15 years ago. But, you know, to be able to take the human side, the personal side, and have that little mentoring coaching effect, again, I think is just so reflective of how far things have come.
Oh, absolutely. And look, when I named my agency and I put my name at the front of the agency, I had so many people question whether that was a good move.
Wow.
And I think from, I guess, a female perspective, I was very passionate about putting my name to my brand.
Yeah.
Also, I want people to know that, and that's why I really have a strong persona in the industry, is because what you see is what you're going to get from my agency. I am the front. The way I am, the way I conduct business, the way I you know, care for people, and my passionate beliefs about impact. Yeah. And impact is not just about business impact, but also about social and personal impact. I think that's really powerful because people are not just looking at a name on a wall and thinking, oh, I hope that, you know, their colouring and their branding is reflective of who they are. They actually, when they approach us, they actually know what they're going to get in terms of values and approach.
It's almost like a personal warranty, you know. It's you think of the old law firms, you know, if your name is on the door, there is a sense of personal warranty. Your integrity is then tied to everything as well. So I really respect that.
Absolutely. And you're personable. Yeah. That relationship and that approach, I think, is really important.
Agree. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been such a wonderful insight. And I think, you know, as you introduced at the start, you know, that relationship between PR and marketing, but also the importance of PR, you know, and for small businesses to see the value and also to understand that there are accessible options, I think is, so important to get across.
Absolutely. And I think I'd encourage people, you know, we're two women that are very passionate about our pillars, but we also know how they can work so beautifully together. So for anyone wanting to reach out, even if they want to do a call with both, it would be lovely for us to work on some projects and some
clients. Agree. And where can people find you? Where are they best to connect with you?
Yeah, so my website, which is danicabpr.com. We're also on Instagram at danicabpr. And we've also got another platform, which is at She Has Breast Cancer, which is a little bit more about that personal coaching for women in crisis.
Amazing. Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time again.
Thank you. It was wonderful.
And I look forward to talking to everyone again soon.
Thanks.
Hey, thanks for listening to another episode. If you don't want to miss one, make sure you subscribe to the show in your podcast app. And if you love it, be sure to share it with friends and colleagues who you think could benefit from increasing their digital marketing confidence. Want more? Head to marianneamies.com to find out how you can work with me directly, to reach out to have me speak at your event, or to grab yourself some free resources.